You're listening to Drive with Richard Glover on ABC Radio Sydney.
The Monday Political Forum. With us this week, Penny Sharp is a state Labor MLC. She's Shadow Minister for Environment and Heritage. Luca Belgiononettis is the founder of New Democracy Foundation. He's also Managing Director of Transfield Holdings. And Glenn Davies is the Anglican Archbishop of Sydney. Welcome. Thank
Good
you.
Afternoon. Thank you, Richard,
for coming in. Now, Donald Trump has been much mocked overnight for referencing a Swedish security incident, which didn't actually happen. Every day, it seems, brings a Trump headline, from the amusing to the baffling to the genuinely radical. How do we separate the trivia from what's important? What's on your just a distraction list of Donald Trumpisms and your this could actually have a big impact on the world Trump list? Penny Sharp.
I think the distraction for me is the overnight twittering of Trump, and particularly things like Ivanka's business. It's not appropriate, but I don't think that's important. What I think is far more important to be concerned about are things like his nominations to the Supreme Court and the nominations he's been making in relation to his Secretary Generals for all of those positions. Betsy DeVos I'd use as one example. So education, no experience in public education, absolutely entwined in business, has not been able to show the Senate how she's going to disentangle her business opportunities. I think the concerns about Trump are actually, you know, he's not draining the swamp, he's just breeding new swamp monsters, I think.
Well, that is interesting. The Defence Secretary Mattis, who's apparently his middle name or his nickname is Mad Dog, but people say he's quite sensible and we should be wishing him more power in the regime. So who knows?
We'll see.
Yeah. Lucas, some of it is amusing, but I guess it's trivial. If his spokesman can't say our Prime Minister's name right, well, that's amusing, but it's not a big issue. How do you separate stuff like that from stuff that really might change the world?
Well, Richard, for me, there is nothing that is just a distraction about Donald Trump. That a person like him could ever become President of the United States makes one question the very system that put him there. And my apologies to my American friends. It's like cats in a sack. We all think that by putting in a new, smarter-looking, fluffier cat, that'll fix the problem. But the problem is not the sack, rather, is the sack and not the cats. So we need to come up with a better sack, a sack that encourages social cohesion, not bitter divisiveness, as elections do. Just consider that in what is arguably the leading light of democracy in the world...
The United States, you're
United
saying.
States.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We have an eccentric, and that's being polite, legitimately elected to the top job. If that doesn't make you want to seriously revisit the system, then I'm not sure what does.
Okay, you're going right to the heart of your foundation, the New Democracy Foundation, saying that there are other democratic models such as citizen juries and so forth rather than just simple election of a leader.
Correct. Elections, the current system frustrates collaboration from the outset and we need to look at it because what candidates seek to promote their differences. That's what elections do. We say let's look at models that encourage collaboration and not divisiveness.
Okay, and I guess Donald Trump is an example of someone who is combative in his very nature. I mean, whether you like him or not, actually, his whole appeal is combative.
But it's not just him. I mean, the whole election process was so toxically divisive. Clinton and Trump.
All right. Glenn Davies, you know, some of this is every day there's a headline. What some things really probably matter a lot and some things don't. How do you divide them with Trump?
Well, Richard, it's very difficult. I think I agree with Penny about Twitter. I mean, Twitter can be a distraction at the best of times, but particularly with Trump, it seems to be an obsession. I think one of the things that I'm concerned about is the integrity. So when Michael Flynn resigned, obviously under pressure, because he misinformed, well, he actually just lied. Mm-hmm. And I wish people would actually use the word lie when it actually is a lie. And I don't think Trump has had the full integrity there. We all make mistakes. I make mistakes as Archbishop. And what you do is you recognise mistakes, well, normally my wife informs me, and then you apologise and make redress if necessary and you move on.
We've got a whole language around this now, don't we? We don't lie, we misspeak and stuff like that.
Absolutely absurd. I think the big impact is the trade issue. Putting America first means we're not putting humanity first. We're not putting the world first. And I think there's a sense in which America first means everyone else comes second or
although
down the trail.
All governments, to a greater or lesser extent, act in their national interests. We do too. Everyone does, don't
yes,
they?
Yes, but they take a trade deal, for example. A trade deal requires compromise, negotiation. So you've got to realise someone on the other side of the fence also needs to win out of this, not just we win regardless come what may. And I think it's that negotiation skill which we're yet to see in Trump. I imagine he had it in his business world, although business is much more cutthroat. When you're dealing with social human problems, you've got to be much more sensitive to the reality of human need. And that hasn't come across yet. Maybe we'll see.
Can I ask you, as a religious leader, one of the things that I think has confused a lot of people in Australia is we look over at America and we see people who have self-described as evangelicals, for instance, and I'm sure very sincerely so, and we try to put together their enthusiasm with Trump for his bad... we try to put that together with the bad language he uses and the bad attitudes to women that he's got and attitudes which just don't seem Christian at all. Do you understand that double think that they've got?
It is a disconnect. I think picking up Luca's problem, the system is you only had two choices. You had Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. I think that the large disenfranchisement, the misunderstanding or the way in which people felt that let down was that they couldn't trust Hillary. And I think that's the element of trust. At least Trump will do what he says he will do. And thus far we've seen that. The press may be surprised about what he's doing, but he did promise he would do that, build the war and make all these statements about refugees, etc. Not at all, in my view, in alignment with a true evangelical understanding. However, having said all that, it is a disconnect, and I'm not quite sure how I put it together. American politics and American religious life is actually very different from what it is in Australia, so I'm not an expert in
all right,
those,
but
it might have
been fields. It might have been the devil you know and all of that. Penny Sharp, Luca, Bell, John Onetis and Glenn Davies are with us. Now, a parent group that successfully ousted church-run classes from public school class time in Victoria has turned its focus to New South Wales. The Fairness in Religion in Schools group claimed victory a couple of years ago in Victoria. Special religious education was pushed out of school hours and treated as an after-school elective. You could do it, but not in school time. What are your memories of religion at school, and should we follow the lead of the Victorians? Penny.
Well, I grew up in the People's Republic of Canberra where there was no SRE, so I have no experience
is that
at
right,
all.
Is it?
No,
oh, okay.
That's right. At the time I went to school, there wasn't any at all. And I think that there is, it's absolutely right for parents to question the way, what's being taught at school, no matter what it is. And I think that the issue we've particularly had in New South Wales has been the difference between the way ethics is treated versus the way that special religious education is treated. And I have to fess up here that my partner is actually an ethics teacher. I think the discussion, you know, SRE, and I'm sure Glenn will say this, has been part of New South Wales schools for a very long time, some would argue since about 1880.
And quite interesting looking at the historical compromises that led to it, actually.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's absolutely different. And every review that there's been, and we're currently waiting for a new review of it. But look, the issue for me is that parents need transparency. They absolutely need to know what's being taught in the classes that their children are attempting. And the big plug I'd put in is that I just think that ethics in New South Wales has been treated extremely poorly. Some have argued that it was a deal done with Mike Baird and Fred Nile in relation to this. I've experienced this as a parent of primary age children, getting the form home and not even having an ethics option, even though it's there, but it's been mandated that you can't actually say that.
You can't offer it out loud.
It's like a secret society. It's also been, I think, put under a lot more scrutiny than some of the SRE reports that we've seen that I think, frankly, are really disturbing.
The reports you've seen in the sense that there are people who, all sorts of, a ragtag of people, some fantastic and some not maybe so fantastic, who come into school to teach.
I think there's an issue about some of the content. So I've previously had people talk to me about concerns around some of the teachings around homosexuality that their kids have experienced within SRE, and real concerns about that. And there was a big report in Queensland, and again, I'm sure Glenn will talk about this, around some of the teachings that I think principals felt they had to intervene in, but really haven't been able to because of the way it's structured in New South Wales.
Okay. I mean, Luca, some people say, look, you sure have comparative religion taught by the teacher who would normally teach you history or ideas. Don't let groups come into the school and in school hours teach particular religions. Do you agree with that or not?
I don't have a problem with that at all. I think the Victorian approach is a good approach. You know, my experience is I went to a religious school, and I think as young...
You went to St. Aloysius, I think.
I don't want to name
Anyway. I just have.
You know, I was awed like most of the
I can read Wikipedia.
You know, you know, the ritual of the mass, the vestments, the incense, the wine and the hosts, and awed by the confessionals and the pervasive sense and foreboding that only young pubescents feel when they're told that masturbation makes you blind. So,
did they really teach you that?
Well, you know, it was that sort of pervasive sense that there was, you know, that foreboding out there.
See, some people would say, look, yeah, all that's true, but this is the, even if you're not religious, this is so central to understanding Western culture, to understanding Shakespeare. You can't read Shakespeare without understanding
this. You don't need religious teachers to tell you that.
We better go to Glenn. So they've got you guys in the guns.
Very helpful.
The sides.
Well, the Ferris certainly does. And they've had a success in Victoria, and that's certainly true. It's slightly different culture in New South Wales, similar to Queensland. It needs to be said the Queensland...
Well, sorry, describe this different culture and why it is historical.
Well, I think the historic situation in New South Wales goes back to the late 19th century, when a lot of the churches had schools. And the government wanted to, colonise, bring all the schools together under the government. And the deal was, we will give you an hour a week in the schools to teach your special religious education.
Okay, so let's standardise education, bring everyone into the tent, but as a quid pro quo, we'll let you... Yeah.
On this occasion, the Catholics were more savvy than the Anglicans. The Anglicans said, yes, we'll follow you. And the Catholics said, no, we won't. So the Catholics still got their SRE and they've kept all their schools. So it was a mistake made by my forefathers, in my view, but nonetheless...
Those nice trusting Anglicans.
So, but in my view, the special religious education is informing young people about a particular faith in the world. Having a school teacher doing is one thing. You need someone to speak with passion. You don't want someone to talk to a Labor Party group which has no passion for the Labor Party or whatever it might be. So therefore, you need to have someone who has some passion and understanding and can see the way in which Christianity and many world religions have affected our Western civilization, our society. Now, without the knowledge of that, and of course, parents vote with their feet with regard to sending children. Far more children are in SRE, a vast majority in SRE in primary schools across the state. Ethics is now an option, but not in every school.
And made difficult to access.
Well, it is certainly there to access, and it shouldn't be made difficult to access. That's my view. But getting ethics teachers is actually difficult to recruit.
Okay, but what about the quality control thing? Because, you know, my kids went to school, and I had no problem about them doing some religious education because of, as I say, I think it's the basis of the culture. But they did come home with alarming stories. You know, they came home one year. It was fantastic. There was a terrific local person who was full of faith and you know, all of that. But the next time it might be a visiting group from Texas who were evangelicals who told them all that you know, Charles Darwin and the whole theory of evolution was wrong.
Well, that must be an earlier era. Because
you're saying I'm old, Glenn.
I didn't want to say that, but I can read Wikipedia too. Because now you have to be trained, you have to be accredited. So every SRE teacher across the state has to go through safe ministry training, working with Children Check, obviously, and we do our own training and upgrading so they know, understand the curriculum and how to teach age-appropriate material to the children. So that kind of thing wouldn't happen today, that you're a Texan coming into
something like that. If it's so good, why not do it after school? We do soccer and chess and debating and all sorts of other things
because
after school.
The significance of this for understanding our education as a whole. It's part of for the well-being of the child to actually understand. Look at the world we have now. Unless you understand the difference between Islam and Judaism or Christianity, you won't begin to understand the conflict that's taking place, let alone the conflict within Islam with regard to
Sunni. But isn't that an argument for comparative religion, not for a Catholic class for the Catholics and Islamic class for the Muslims?
The difference is actually... The way in which SRE came into the schools is as though the parents could bring their children to learn about their faith. So this is all about parent control. The parents decide to send their children to SRE. If they don't want them to go to SRE, they don't have to. There's no compulsion at that level. And the vast majority of parents are doing it and seeing the well-being of the children at stake in terms of that and learning with others how to converse sensitively and appropriately about religion with other students.
All right, well, we'll move on. But Penny, do you want to have a final word to that?
I think that as I said, my big plug is that if SRE is going to be in schools and ethics needs equal footing, the reality is that for schools where kids are not learning SRE, if they don't have ethics there, they're twiddling their thumbs and they're not allowed to learn anything. We have precious time in our school. Every teacher will tell you that the curriculum is full. We have precious time. I think that we need to make sure that kids are doing things productively when they're there.
Okay, but it sounds like you're saying, look, you're actually happy for special religious education to stay as long as the other side gets a fair go.
Look, I accept that it's been part of the New South Wales system for a long time. My focus would be on improving that for all of the other students, but also making sure that there's, you know, good oversight of the content, because I don't necessarily agree. In fact, I don't agree with Glenn that all of the content is fine, because that's not the reports that I get.
And Luca, as far as the Vespers are going, those smoking handbags, they're good. They're a good look.
We love all the effect.
All the content is on the website, so every parent can see the curriculum of SRE and find out what their children are being taught.
All right. It is 9 to 6 on the Monday Political Forum. Sydney. Penny Sharp's here from Labor. Luca Belgiorno-Nettis from the New Democracy Foundation and Anglican Archbishop Glenn Davies. Just quickly on the roads, if you're battling around, here is the latest from Live Traffic New South Wales. 8 minutes to 6 is the time. At Fairfield West, Hamilton Road at Tasman Parade, the lights are blacked out. They're repairing them at the moment. At West Pennant Hills, Pennant Hills Road at Cardinal Avenue, two cars involved in an accident southbound. If you're in Moorbank, the M5 motorway approaching Moorbank Avenue, two cars involved in an accident westbound. It's in lane 1. And at Petersham, Parramatta Road at West Street, a car breakdown there eastbound in the right turn lane. One last one, it's Rhodes Concord Road at Llewellyn Street, a car breakdown southbound. That's the latest.
You're with Richard Glover on ABC Radio Sydney.
Well, 100 experts from 53 organisations have today issued a plan to help Australia tackle obesity, including taxing junk food, especially sugary drinks, to make them more expensive. Well, already crossbench senators such as Darren Hinch and Pauline Hanson have shot down the proposals, with Hanson, for one, saying it's about time people took responsibility for their own actions and what they put in their own mouth. Has she got a point? Luca.
Well, Richard, thank you. This is a kind of a Dorothy Dixer for me, because in 2015, New Democracy was actually retained by the Victorian government to oversee a citizens' jury of 100 people for Vic Health on this topic. The question put to the jury was, how can we make it easier for people to eat better? And in their final report back to government, they recommended the jurors, amongst other things, a tax of at least 20% on sugar-sweetened beverages. So as we, with many vexed questions, we would say rather than off-the-cuff opinion, it's much more useful to give people, a representative sample of the community, the opportunity and time to consider more deeply the issue outside of party politics and shallow posturing.
Okay, so this is, just to explain, this is how New Democracy Foundation thinks we should progress in lots of public policy issues. You pick a random selection of citizens. They don't have to be experts. They're absolutely
representative.
Like a jury system, really.
Correct.
And then they call expert witnesses. So they might ring up Melbourne University.
I mean, there's some background material that's provided by Vic Health and the rest of it. And from there, they start to have the domain professionals, the sector experts, present to the jurors.
And they said sugar tax, sure, go for it.
Yes, is one of their recommendations. I've got the full report here if you want.
Okay, so some people say it's nanny state, though, don't they? That's the great phrase that, as Pauline says, individuals should take responsibility.
Well, look, at the end of the day, what are we talking about here? We're talking about what do people in general want, but not just as an opinion, but as a considered, thoughtful, reflective judgment.
And you say if you put people down and give them lots of information and let them study it, that's the...
Well, this is the example. It's right there.
Conclusion they'll come to. Penny, do you agree?
Well, the Upper House recently did an inquiry into this very issue. It was quite an interesting process, highly polarised by the people who turned up, depending on where you were. But look, the take home for me was that I think that more than anything, parents are desperate for help when they're actually trying to deal with it, because it's actually an issue of sheer availability of junk food, pervasive everywhere it is. I think it's an issue of, the role of government, you know, hospitals, school canteens. I think there is a lot that we can do to actually help the community do that, because I think part of it is that there's, advertising, I think, is another issue. Our committee was very polarised around the sugar tax issue.
Kevin, what did you think about it? Because that's the pointy end of this. What do you think about a sugar tax?
Look, you know, I can easily say it's a matter for the federal government. But look, my view is that these are public health matters. We have lots of experience at tobacco and a whole range of things, and that all of it should be looked at. There was some pretty compelling evidence from out of Mexico in terms of the impact of that.
20% decline in sugary drinks in Mexico.
And look, I think we should look at all of those things. I'm not endorsing it because I think that it's not just for me about sugar and soft drinks. It's actually, as I said, I think it's availability. And I think particularly there's a whole, I just think there's a bigger role we can play in actually supporting families to help their kids stay away from the lemonades and drink more water.
Glenn Davies, it is all through the Western nations, this is a problem. It's not just a whole lot of individuals having a collective failure of will at the same time, is it?
One wonders. Certainly, governments need to govern. And 2/3 of our children are obese. That's a startling statistic. And we need to address that. Pauline Hanson talks about they should take responsibility of what they put in their mouth. Well, they put cigarettes in their mouth. They put ecstasy tablets in their mouth. So we had hospitalisation of, half a dozen people down in Melbourne, taking up beds from emergency accidents that which might have taken where the person isn't at fault. So we need to. I think the government needs to govern with regard to taking actions. There's a limit to human freedom, and personal freedom isn't absolute. You can't go out on the road and decide to drive on the right-hand side. That freedom is limited. You've got to drive on the left-hand side. So there is a responsible place for that. I think the use of sugar has become an addictive tool in our beverages, whereas water is now. You've provided us with water, which is very nice.
Luxury around here.
Luxury. And I think that we need to educate people. I like the jury system that Luco talks about. And if people themselves are saying this, we need some action and some will with regard to the government.
All right. It's 6:03 on the Monday Political Forum. Penny Sharp, Luco Bell, John Onetis and Glenn Davies are with us this week. Now, a car company has bought the intellectual property to the old Ambassador car, basically a version of the 1956 Morris Oxford. It suggests a move to take old car designs and put them back into manufacture. So what's the old car you'd like to see back on the roads and why, Penny?
Well, you may be so nostalgic that you obviously the listeners can't see this. I had an EJ Holden prior to my children being born, and we had to get rid of it because we couldn't fit the baby seat and the petrol was leaking through into the back
it's
of it.
Red and fantastic.
Red
looking,
with a white top. Her name is Bernice. So I'm putting a plug for this. It would obviously have to be electric. But for me, this is the car that needs to be rebuilt.
Well, I mean, it's a sort of American graffiti car without quite the fins, but it's that style of vehicle, isn't it?
We loved it so much and we gave it away and I've regretted it every day since.
Luca, if you can bring back an old car, maybe we'll put a bit more new technology in it, but what are you going to bring back?
Well, the job's already been done for me, Richard, because it's the Fiat 500, it's the Cinquecento, because when we used to go back to Italy, we'd see the little car there. They've reinvented it here. Now my wife's got that car, so that's good. But for me, it'd be like, my first wheels were a two-wheeler. It was a motorbike, and now I've got myself a Ducati because I needed a more macho version, not just a Vespa.
I think you like Italian things, do you? Ducati. Glenn, what do you want?
The combi van. When I was in youth group as a young boy, we piled all the people in from our church youth group, and it was just wonderful time. Combi van, bring them back in style.
You were that guy on the beach with the fire, and as you used to walk up the beach, you'd wonder, I wonder what they're singing.
Yeah.
And they were always singing the same thing.
Yeah, Kumbaya.
You got the whole. Yeah, well, that one. These are the ones we're going to bring back. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard.
Monday Political Forum. Penny Sharp is State Labor MLC Shadow Minister for Environment and Heritage. Luco Bell, John Onetis is founder of the New Democracy Foundation. You can find that online if you want to know more about their work. He's also Managing Director of Transfield Holdings. And, of course, Glenn Davies is Sydney's Anglican Archbishop. Monday Political Forum for another week.